The Veterans Affairs Department now says more than 57,000 veterans have been waiting at least 90 days for their first medical appointments. An additional 64,000 appear to have never gotten those appointments at all. Now, one solution Congress is considering entails giving the VA more money to close the gap. Robert Levinson is a senior defense analyst with Bloomberg Government, and he joins us now with a closer look at VA spending. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, Emily.
So, first of all, you've taken a detailed look at VA spending as it is, and this is one department where Congress has really never been stingy with money. When it comes to health care, where does VA spend most of its money?
Well, it's interesting, Emily. Like you say, they haven't been stingy. The VA budgets have been going up pretty steadily. And, you know, there's two categories that sort of stand out of patients. There's what they call, the priority one patients, which are the most disabled, and they certainly are the most costly. About 36-35% of all VA health spending goes towards those. But another category that's grown, per veteran cost has grown enormously, is what they call the priority five veterans, who are not necessarily disabled, but they are poor. And the cost of each of those individuals has been going up fairly rapidly since 2007, ahead of where medical inflation and just the growth in the population would expect it would take you.
And in terms of dollar amounts, how much money are we talking about per year?
If you're talking about the total cost, it's somewhere around for those poor veterans, it's about $11 billion.
Okay, and for the ones that are the most disabled, I assume ones who have perhaps lost a limb or have severe PTSD and the like?
Yeah, I think that if I recall, I don't have the figures in front of me, but I think for the total for annual in 2012, which were the latest figures we used, it was about $16 billion.
Okay, but all told, I mean, no matter what the veterans have, it doesn't seem, at least as far as we know, that the VA has been discriminating against one type of veteran or another in terms of being able to see people. Is that right?
No, I don't. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, people stand in line. They essentially come in the door and say, I need a primary care appointment, and there just simply hasn't been enough capacity to fill those appointments in the goal that, resigned Secretary General Shinseki said of 14 days.
And explain how the VA groups people. I mean, where does the priority group one come from versus priority group five? And is there a two, three, and four?
Yes. There's actually like eight, and then there's even some subcategories. Basically, the priority one are the veterans with the highest rate of disability. You know, in addition to getting medical care, a veteran who's disabled as a result of his service gets, a monthly payment from the VA. And there's a rating on your disability, and it has to do with your employability, how much the injury affects your employability. So the highest are like the over 50%, and that may be people who've, you know, lost a limb or something like that. And then the category two is like 20 to 30%, and then category one is like 10%. And then there's category four, who are very expensive. Luckily, it's a small group, but very expensive because they are homebound or in nursing care. And then, like I say, there's these priority five veterans who are not necessarily have any disability connected to their service. They're simply, they don't meet income thresholds. They're basically poor veterans who are just getting their care because they can't afford it somewhere else. And then there's other subcategories that has to do with disability and what you got as service. Things like if you got a Medal of Honor or Purple Heart, they move you up or down the category list as well.
One thing that has been widely reported is the fact that there are actually fewer vets from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars compared to those from past wars, but that more of them seem to be seeking care from the VA. Do you know how that breaks down when you talk about those that might be the most disabled versus the ones in the most financial need of VA care? I'm just wondering if there are demographics that are associated with those groups as well.
Well, one of the things, of course, we're finding with the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and it's a sort of a good news story in a way, is far more veterans of those wars. Yes, they've been smaller wars than, say, Vietnam or Korea or certainly World War II, but far more veterans of those are actually surviving. But they're surviving with heavy wounds, and that has to do with the level of body armor, which has been very effective, and the level of medical care they get on the battlefield. So theoretically, you know, a veteran who has lost a limb or two or even three limbs in these recent wars probably would have died on the battlefield in Vietnam or in a previous conflict. So they're coming home, like I say, thank God, but they are severely wounded, whereas in previous wars they may not have been there. We're also getting more and more knowledge about things like PTSD and traumatic brain injury. We're much more knowledgeable about those, and we have more and more treatments for those things. But again, all of those things cost money. You know, the big cost driver on things are not just the recent war vets, but it's really that Vietnam generation who are hitting their sort of mid to late 60s, and that's where the costs really escalate, is just to simply people age. You know, World War II and Korea, those guys are old, and many of them, frankly, are dying off. So it's that Vietnam generation that's hitting that primary health care consumption age cohort, which is also causing a lot of stress on the system.
And when you look at those in priority group 5, i.e. those that might not have severe disabilities but do have financial need, do they tend to fall into veterans of a particular generation, say Vietnam-era vets versus those from the recent wars?
I haven't seen the breakdown on all of those by that age cohort. I have not seen those breakdown figures. I suspect that a lot of them are more recent vets that have come back and have had trouble employing, but I can't say for sure because I haven't looked at that breakdown.
We're speaking with Rob Levinson. He's a senior defense analyst at Bloomberg Government, and we're talking about how the Veterans Affairs spends money on healthcare patients. Now, of course, overlying all of this is the recent VA scandal, and as we mentioned, one solution, popular solution, seems to be just give the VA more money, at least to be able to hire more physicians or to send people to private healthcare where they can be seen. Given the deep dive that we've done into VA's spending, what do you think the solution, the consequences of that might be if VA were to get, say, a bundle of new money?
Well, again, one of the problems is, like I say, this problem seems to stem from primary care appointments. The VA right now is short, I think, about 400 primary care physicians. And it's not that they don't have the money. It's simply they can't hire those folks. You know, by some measures, there's a nationwide shortage of primary care physicians. And so, you know, a doctor going to work for the VA on a government salary and all the sort of downside of working for the government, it's not necessarily the most attractive option. So there's a difficulty there. Now, alternatively, they could give the VA money and simply say, you know, go seek private care. They do that to a certain extent already, but they certainly could expand that for more primary care. But, you know, again, the primary care system is stressed as well, and that means that those vets are going to get in line in the private health system. And there's probably some wait times and things there as well. So that can help the problem by either hiring more doctors in the VA or sending more guys or sending more guys out to the private sector. But even that, you're still going to stress the system because there's just so, you know, the supply and demand equations are sort of not equivalent.
And frankly, neither solution seems to be really a short-term fix. Each requires a good deal of time and structure to set up.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, they also need to look at, you know, like I say, they set this 14-day requirement, which I believe after the audit that came out, I think yesterday, they've abandoned that because they said it was just simply totally unrealistic. And
that's
it created
right.
These perverse incentives inside the system, which, you know, and I'm not excusing anything, but people were sort of incentivized to lie or to cook the books to make it look like they were meeting this very unrealistic standard. You need to get rid of those kinds of things. You know, you need to have people incentivized to report the honest numbers. If it's a resource question, which ultimately this was, it was simply a resource question, then they need to be honest about it, and they need to go to Congress and say, look, you know, we cannot meet the current need with the current resources we have, so we're going to have to figure out something else to do.
Rob Levinson is a senior defense analyst with Bloomberg Government. Rob, thanks as always for joining us.
My pleasure, Emily.